Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're very happy to have join us Keith Grossman. Keith is the CEO and chairman of Nevro, a med device company that has been very successful and has grown rapidly. And most recently, and for the second time, he was the president, CEO, and director of Thoratec Corporation and led them up to their sale in 2015 to St. Jude Medical. And he has just a great background, has been a board member and is currently vice chairman of Alcon and the chairman of Outset Medical, and previously served as a member of board of directors at Intuitive Surgical, Siphon, ViewRay, and Zeltech. He has some great things to share, thoughts around leadership and managing your career, and we're looking forward to today's conversation with Keith. And it's great to have Keith joining us for our conversation today. Appreciate you taking time out of your day.
It's nice to be here, Mark. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. Well, Keith, tell me, just maybe give us a little bit of an overview of your career story. And I would love to hear a little bit of your background and how you got to where you are today.
Well, it's a 39-year career at this point, Mark. So I'll try to be as brief as I can. But I grew up in the Midwest, and I started my career actually carrying a bag in Northern Ohio for the McGaw Division of American Hospital Supply, which some of your listeners will remember. It was a great place to start a career, and quickly went from there into sales management and then marketing management. Became a sales and marketing VP for a division of Sulzer Medica, actually in the oral surgery area. It's now, I think, the dental implant business for someone. I'm not even actually sure where it's ended up at this point now. I was briefly a division president after that for a private equity backed generic drug manufacturer that had been rolled up among a variety of entities, and just did that long enough to convince me to get back into medical devices. I then joined as CEO of a very small company at the time called Thoratec, which had just gotten the very first FDA approval for a first generation left ventricular assist device. And I ran Thoratec for about 10 years and then stepped away to do some other things with my career, but stayed on the board there for another 9 years before actually coming back, but I'll come back to that. During those 9 years, after spending 10 running Thoratec, and during that 10, by the way, we went from 20 employees to, gosh, I think at the time I stepped down the first time, probably 500 or so, about $200 million in revenue. It had been a long pull to get to that point. I then spent about 4 years in the venture capital fund of TPG, and co-led with a partner of mine the medical device investing practice there for 4 years. Really missed the operating world. I went back into to do that as CEO of Conceptus, a small public women's health company that was a bit of a turnaround. Ran that for about a year and a half, and we were acquired by Bayer Healthcare. I was then asked to come back and run Thoratec for the second time. I was still on the board there, and came back into Thoratec in late 2014, and within about a year and a half, St. Jude acquired the company. Thoratec now is a key part of the heart failure franchise of Abbott as a result of that acquisition. Spent about 3 or 4 years in what I thought was retirement, sitting doing board work, and was invited to come in and lead a turnaround of sorts here at Nevro, where I am now. And that was about 3.5 years ago. In addition to all that, I've been on probably 16 public and private boards along the way, almost all of those in med tech.
Well, we were talking before we got started, and I was at Nevro, visited there back in, I think it was 2007, and there was just a handful of people, and you have over 1,000 people there in the company, have had great growth over those years. and you're, as you're leading, we'll talk a little bit about just some of your philosophy around leadership. But I always like to ask this question of most everybody that's on, if you were able to spin back time and go back and talk to a 22-year-old Keith and give him some advice, knowing what you know now, what would you tell him?
It'd probably be a long list. right. You know, I think I would tell a 22-year-old version of me or anybody at that point in your career to don't underestimate the importance of spending some time at some large companies, particularly at the beginning of your career. I think the training you get there is invaluable and impossible to replicate at small startup environments. On the other side of that coin, I think I'd say don't spend too much time there. That there's once you've gotten that experience, I think to spend an entire career without having the experience of a smaller or mid-sized company where you can get involved in more things and stretch yourself a bit more would be a real miss for most people. I'd probably tell my 22-year-old self to calm down a little bit. I think impatience and ambition can be great motivators at that point in your career, and they were for me. But they can also drive you. They can always drive you crazy. And I think two other quick things I'd say: pick people as you look at opportunities. Obviously, the fundamentals of an opportunity are important as you kind of map out your career. But all those things I think are junior to the people that you're going to work for and work with. And ultimately those will make the difference between success, enjoyment, and other things that really matter. And then finally, listen to your instincts. I think about along the way, the choices I made that didn't work out as well. And I think most of them probably went, I was going against my instincts. Occasionally they'll fail you, but most often they won't. And I think people too often try to outthink them as they make professional choices.
So was there any advice you received early on that you should have ignored?
That I should have ignored? No, there was probably some advice that I did ignore, and I'm glad I ignored it. I think the first time I left a large company to do something more entrepreneurial and a little bit smaller, I was warned by people that it was risky and that I shouldn't take risks with my career. And I think, and that worried me at the time, but I think looking back, you're allowed to some swings and misses. Everybody takes some. And I think if you don't take them here and there, it's a mistake. The other advice I think I would ignore is the advice that you can have work all the work-life balance you want and have everything you want professionally. And I hear this a lot, and I hear it more now than I think I did at the beginning of my career. And I think it's misleading, and I think it's a little unfair to people who are earlier in their career. I think you've got to make a rational trade-off. I think if work-life balance is your primary priority, then I think you need to be prepared to make some trade-offs in terms of what you get out of your career. If you're really ambitious about what you want in your career, I think you need to be prepared to make some trade-offs, especially early on in work-life balance. And I always worry when I hear young people being told, you can have both. You can get everything you want out of your career and you don't have to make any trade-offs early on in work-life balance. And I think that's unfair advice to younger people in their career, because I don't think it's realistic.
So we've got a number of people that are maybe first-time leaders or first-time CEOs, and they go in and have an existing team that they're going to be leading or maybe having to build a team. What would you, knowing what you know now as far as around leadership, what are some important things that you would do coming into a new leadership position?
Yeah, I've given this advice so many times, I can't count. The first thing that I always advise is overhire. Hire people for the company that you're aspiring to be, not where you are now. And that means you're going to have to be a good recruiter, a good salesperson, but you're also going to have to pay up. And you're going to have to make it worth it for people to take that risk. But the difference between having people that can scale with you, in fact, can drive the scaling with you, between that and hiring people that are simply maybe suitable for the current stage of the company, but not the next, is a huge difference. I think you need to really assemble a team who can empty your calendar if necessary, people who can really make your life easy. Those are the people that will drive the company successfully. You know, I would hire for both EQ and IQ. I think sometimes with early leaders, there's a trend or maybe a tendency rather to hire for education and to hire for IQ and maybe not experience and EQ, to kind of use the commonly used buckets. I think that can be a mistake, particularly for younger leaders. And then finally, I would, you know, hire a leadership team that you think is going to help you create your culture, because you can't create a culture or think you're going to create a culture A and then hire senior people that don't reflect anything other than culture B. I think so. You have to decide really first how you want to do business, what your culture and values are going to be. And if your leaders that you're hiring don't reflect that, you're not going to get what you want. So those are, I think, some of the things that I would maybe tell somebody coming into this role for the first time.
One thing I think that a lot of new CEOs struggle with, just really getting a grasp of it, and hopefully they've sat on boards before becoming a CEO, but in some cases they've never worked with a board. What are some things that you've learned as far as you've sat on a number of boards, you've been a chairman? Talk a little bit about just some insights that you'd give somebody as they're working with a board.
Yeah, that's most people get thrown in the deep end, right? With the, honestly, with the first CEO role in terms of working with a board. First of all, you know, I would say it depends. There are really are two or three different flavors of boards, and they're really different. Many first-time medtech CEOs are going to have venture capital boards. And alignment is always the key challenge there. I mean, you have to remember that venture capitalists are fiduciaries first of their own funds and their LPs, and second of your company. And that's not a disloyalty issue. It's just reality. I think successful CEOs with VC boards have to make sure they're considering the priorities of that particular board member as well as their priority for the company. And if they do that, I think they'll be more successful. Private equity boards, or rather more traditional private equity buyout boards, usually have one sole financial owner and maybe some independents on the board. This is a CEO job that's more like a division president role. The independent directors are really there as advisors or consultants, but you really kind of effectively have one controlling director. These can be terrific roles, but CEOs often, I think, assume that role is going to be a little bit more of an autonomous CEO role than it turns out to be. And so I think your expectations have to be balanced. And finally, public boards, I think, tend to have more truly independent boards. And the CEOs in public boards truly have the longest rope with which they can do both good things and bad, but it's more of what we think of as traditional board roles. So from an advice standpoint, I'd first say, you know, be really picky, put really great people on your board. And you've heard this cliche before, but, you know, stick to a no jerk policy. You don't want people on the board that can, one person can disrupt the function of a whole board. I wouldn't focus as much on resume or Rolodex as sometimes CEOs do. They're critical, but I think directors need to come to a board with both, you know, their IQ and their EQ suitcases pretty fully packed and not be light on either one. I would say be really transparent with the board. If there's any confusion over who is playing what role between you and the directors, you got to talk about it. You can't have confusion, because that will end up in trouble. Don't manage the board. Don't play hide the ball. A common problem, you got to strike the balance between keeping your board at the right altitude and giving them everything they want. Keep them informed, educated on the business. An underinformed director is not going to be helpful at best, and they're going to get frustrated and become interventional at worst. And finally, you know, just listen. You know, sometimes your closeness to the business makes you much smarter about the business. But also usually the director's distance from the business makes them a little bit more objective and a little bit wiser in some cases about the business. So it's important not to confuse the two and to really listen to your directors.
As you were looking at your career, and it seems like a lot of times people don't end up doing what they thought they originally were going to do in their career. But as you were thinking about as far as roles or functional areas that you wanted to get experience in, were you intentional about that as far as kind of getting a wide range of experience? Talk a little bit about that, of managing your career.
I was at times. I mean, sometimes sure. It's intentional, sometimes it's accidental, yep. Right? I mean, look, when I came out of my my undergraduate program, my plan at the time was to be a veterinarian. So
okay.
my plans did sure. change a little bit early on. I think when I started, though, in my business career, I didn't know what my aspirations were initially. I think at first I decided I was a sales rep. I really wanted to be a sales manager. Mm-hmm. But I did make some other intentional decisions on the way. I think I decided fairly early that I wanted to do something broader than that. And I made a decision early to take a lateral into marketing because I wanted to get different exposure. I made a decision at some point to go into a non-device industry. And I had been kind of a device person because I wanted to pick up general management and I wanted to see a different side of the industry. That was, while I decided I wanted to come back to devices, was extremely helpful. And finally, I think, at some point in my career when I decided that I had a resume that could sustain doing something really different, after my first CEO role, I stepped into a venture capital role and really thought it was the right time to give that a try. And I'll tell you what, it was a fantastic experience. What you learn looking at, 100, 200 deals a year of all different kinds throughout healthcare is just phenomenal. It really was a great education. It wasn't really what I wanted to do with my time. I like leading a team. I like having common goals and working as a team. So I think ultimately I decided that investing really wasn't where I wanted to spend the balance of my career. But boy, I'll tell you, it was a great time out. It was a great education along the way.
Great. Well, every leader that I talk to reads and keeps up to date as far as on trends. And are there any books that you recommend to your leadership team or to other leaders?
I don't. I don't. <No? laughs> I'm not going to give you the answer you're looking at. By the way, I'm a very active reader. I have been all sure. my life. I've read at least what feels like a ton of stuff. But there really aren't any individual books that have had that kind of influence on my life. And so I'm not going to make any up for you. Okay. I tend to read for context and not for prescriptions. I don't often read business books. I read historical biographies, history generally, sometimes or even really good fiction. I think, I don't know, my personal opinion is that you should read to help inform kind of your frame of reference so you can come up with your own answers. I don't read to get answers, which is why I don't tend to read business books. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes when I meet people who are constantly quoting a book or handing out a book that they think provides the insight, I'm not sure that the conclusion I reach is that they're necessarily original thinkers. So that just is my view on reading. Sure, no. I don't often hand out books to my team and say, read this and it's going to make us better at A, B, or C. It's just not, it's not my take on reading.
So I'm going to throw you a question that you may or may not have an answer to, but if you were to go back, any historical character that you would love to sit down with and spend an hour?
Wow. That's a tough one. I'm a huge fan of the founding era, sort of the mid 1700s. So if I could go back, I think, and spend time with any of the framers, it would be, to me, that would be fascinating to really understand the dynamics and the details behind everything I've been reading about over the years. Probably someone like a Thomas Jefferson, or Benjamin Franklin would be just, if you've read some of the stuff about their lives, I can't imagine somebody more interesting to go back and and spend some time with.
Absolutely. So outside of work, I know you're a busy busy person, but what do you do to recharge?
Well, let's see. I like to spend time with my family. That's always been kind of my first priority. And if I have time other than that, I'll play a little bit of golf, not well, but I'll play. I like to exercise, read, as we've been talking about. My wife and I like to travel, although we've not done as much of that over the last couple of years. And we spend a fair time up in Tahoe in the Sierra.
Great. Well, is there any parting advice that you would give a newer up and coming leader?
Well, if you've been a first time leader or CEO over the last 2 years, congratulations. Let me assure you that it gets better. I think we need to continue to focus on, you know, whatever the core value proposition that's unique to so many areas of med tech that can't be replicated by pharma or biotech. And by focusing on those things like valuation and growth rates that we all aspire to will come back and will be rewarded. But it's, I can say the last couple of years have been probably among the most difficult to be leading in med tech that I can remember. My sense is it's getting better. And if they've been a first-time leader leading over these last 2 years, they should take heart that it almost certainly will be better.
Well, thank you, Keith. This has been a lot of fun, and I know this is going to be helpful for those listening, and wish you continued success in your as you lead your company, and appreciate your time today.
Well, thanks, Mark. Thanks for including me in the series. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.